you're listening to the Habits for Success podcast with award-winning author, actor, four-time Ironman triathlete, coach, and TEDx speaker, G. Brian Benson, where he chats up inspiring, creative, and thought-provoking authors, athletes, actors, artists, and entrepreneurs from all walks of life as they share their stories, success habits, struggles, and wisdom that propelled them to their own unique version of success. Be prepared each episode to be inspired, learn something new, and have some helpful takeaways that will provide insight, empowerment, and tools to live your best life.
Welcome, friends, to Habits for Success, the podcast. I hope this finds you well. I'm your host, G. Brian Benson, and this week's habit for success that I want to share with you is boldly say yes. Yes is such a simple yet powerful word. It can transform lives, move mountains, and change the world. Saying yes isn't always easy, but it's worth it. To say yes requires trust. Trust in yourself, trust in the hunches that you are receiving, and trust that you can accomplish whatever you are saying yes to. More than likely, it is something that you haven't had the opportunity to do before, and that involves risk. I always knew that I was headed in the right direction if something felt both scary and fun. One of the things that I am most proud of is the fact that I have continued to show up and say yes. Yes to trusting my intuition. Yes to leaving my family's business. Yes to my personal self-growth process. Yes to continually stepping out of my comfort zone. And yes to all the projects that I felt compelled to bring to life. I have learned that saying yes sets an intention of success as well as helps to create a positive flow of momentum, both incredibly important as we create new habits and build our foundations for success. When you say yes, you stand to grow, gain confidence, improve your situation, create new opportunities, lead with your heart, be an inspiration for others, achieve your goals and move toward your intentions, have unique experiences, reach new heights, and become empowered. To say yes also means take control of a situation. Sometimes you need to step up and just say, "I got this. I'm going to do whatever it takes to put this together and make it successful." I learned that each time I took control, it got a little bit easier the next time, and the next time, and so on and so forth. Taking control of a situation builds momentum, and momentum builds confidence. I want to share a personal story where I boldly said yes. In 2015, I received a phone call from a gentleman that I had briefly met while I was living in Reno, Nevada, named Ben. Ben now lived in Los Angeles and told me he was curating a TEDx event in Pasadena and felt like I might be a good addition to the roster of speakers. Would I like to do it? At that time in my life, I hadn't ever really given thought to doing a TED Talk, but I was certainly aware of them. So when he asked if I wanted to do it, butterflies immediately filled my stomach and a million things ran through my head. When? Where? How long do I have to prepare for it? What will I talk about? Do I have what it takes? What if I screw up and thousands of people see me screw up watching it on video? Will I be able to memorize a 15-minute talk? You get the picture. I immediately went the fear route. But almost just as quickly, I took a deep breath and realized that although it would be a potentially scary proposition, I also felt like it could be a fun opportunity and an incredible experience to learn and grow by. My intuition was banging the drums, go for it. So I gulped and said yes, and trusted that I could do it and that everything else would fall into place, which I am very happy to say that it did. It was a truly empowering experience for me, and I am so glad that I had the opportunity to share my talk. I learned a lot about myself and gained another level of confidence from the event. I also met a whole bunch of really kind and cool people. What more could I ask for? As Christopher Robin once shared to Winnie the Pooh, "Promise me you'll always remember that you're braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think." I couldn't agree more. Boldly say yes. It will be the best thing you ever did. When was the last time you boldly said yes? What could you boldly say yes to now? And now on to today's interview. Abigail Wright is a transformational coach and opera singer whose mission in life is to wake people up and help them see that the world is magical. She's been a professional freelancer for over two decades, navigating her ever-changing journey to Carnegie Hall, the Kennedy Center, the Metropolitan Opera, and international film festivals. She's gone from wanting to die every day, terrified of the constant insecurity of life, to living an ever-expanding path of possibility and joy. As a CTI-trained coach, speaker, and writer, she brings that experience and vision to the world and helps people expand their lives through change. Welcome, Abby.
Hey, thanks so much, Brian.
Ah, it's my pleasure. I'm so glad we finally got a chance to chat.
Yeah, me too.
So, gosh, I mean, you've done a lot of amazing, really cool things.
Thanks.
I don't think we've never had an opera singer on here before.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Well, we're just starting out too, so yes. But no, this is an honor. So currently, I know you've got a lot of things going on. Do you want to share with our listeners just a little bit of what's going on in your life right now?
Ooh, right now. Well, it's November. So I am at the Metropolitan Opera this season. I'm singing in the ensemble, the part-time ensemble for Damnation of Faust, which is coming up. We start rehearsals in December. We're doing a concert opera version of that Berlioz version of the Faust narrative. So that's kind of exciting. We're doing right now Orfeo ed Euridice, which is super cool. It's with the Mark Morris dancers and it's a really great production. And I'm also in Turandot, which is on a little hiatus right now, but it'll come back. I actually get to be in the New Year's Gala for the first time, which is very exciting.
Congratulations.
And then thanks. And then it comes back in April. So that'll be cool. And also this month, I start my certification journey for life coaching. I've already started my client base, and so I'm working with some clients. And I'm really excited because I finished my training with CTI in June, and it's really great to be able to go through the certification process with them to just get my life coaching business and life, that side of things, up and running. It's a big passion of mine, and I'm really excited that that's going to start moving forward faster.
That's awesome. Wow, that's definitely a lot of stuff happening. So do you, how do you keep it all, how do you keep it separated? I mean, you obviously, you're singing at night, correct?
Mostly. I mean, mostly. We have rehearsals too. So before this interview, actually, I'm also rehearsing for two different operas right now, as well as a soloist. I should have mentioned that.
Wow. I knew you were holding out.
I'm singing A Doll's House by this great composer, Raymond Ludeke, and I'll be playing Mrs. Lind, and that'll be in March here on Broadway at the Symphony Space. And then I'm also doing a workshop opera for Harlem Opera Theater, and we're working on Emmett Till, which is a really great production. So I have rehearsals sort of during the day. Sometimes I sing, I'm doing another gig in December with the American Symphony Orchestra. It's, you know, it's really great. Sometimes I just wake up and I see an email that says, hey, would you like to do this gig at Carnegie Hall? And I check my schedule and see if it fits, and if it does, then I get to do it. So I'm very lucky to have been singing at Carnegie since I was like 19 years old, and it never gets old. But yeah, to answer your question, I kind of have rehearsals all over the place. My life is not very static, and that can be good and that can be difficult in some ways. My schedule is like, I often don't know what I'm doing until the night before or maybe two nights before, because it's very different from day to day.
Sure.
And so life coaching is awesome because I can fit it in, and I have, you know, an Acuity scheduler that works with my Squarespace page, and my clients can go on and see which hours I'm available during the week and just book. So it works really well for me in terms of flexibility.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. What has singing and performing taught you? I know that's kind of a broad question, but.
Oh, man. I mean, it's taught me to be flexible in a lot of ways. I think that's probably the number one thing it's taught me, is to be flexible. Not just, you know, from conductor to conductor, everybody's going to be a little bit different. So it's taught me really how to be able to read people and their desires and what they want. It's taught me how to be able to listen really well. So that I can blend in an ensemble, or so that I can just stay in tune, or, you know, keep with whatever tone happens to be happening at the moment. It's taught me a lot of intuition, actually, which is kind of shocking. And as far as just to continue the flexibility piece, I would say, you know, being a freelancer, often I don't know necessarily where my next paycheck might come from.
Sure.
And that used to really terrify me. when I first moved to New York, I actually moved here in 2007. I've been singing with the Metropolitan Opera now for 12 years. Kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. And I moved here for them. And it actually came as a surprise to me. I was going to move out to Los Angeles and try my hand at acting. I was going to do film and television. And that's, you know, I was like, well, I don't have any gigs. I might as well just go out there and see what happens. And then I got a call from the Met about a week before I was about to leave for a music festival that summer in Aspen. And they asked if I would sing War and Peace. And I was like, okay, sure. I guess, you know, I'll move home with my parents in Jersey. They lived there at the time. And then I'll move to LA. And then while I was driving to Aspen, they called me and they said, would you like to do two other shows this season? And I was like, okay, I guess I'm moving to New York. And that sort of started my journey of flexibility. And then when I moved here, eventually, you know, it became really hard for me not having that stability, and I got really depressed. And I'd also been through a couple of traumas in my life, which I think in some ways makes me a better coach.
Absolutely.
Knowing, you know, how to handle some of those things. But at the time, you know, when I went to therapy for the first time in 2009, I sort of wanted to die every day. And
that was right at the same time that you started. No, that was a couple years after you've been here in New York.
Yeah, singing. it was about 2 years after. You know, I hate winter.
So you just kind of got depressed because of the weather and maybe the stress of not drawing a regular paycheck.
Yeah. And when I, you know, turned up that year in 2009, I think it was, or maybe 2010, it was about to end in February. And I thought, oh, God, I don't know when my next gig is going to come up. I don't know, you know, how I'm going to survive this spring. And I just want to die every day. So I was going to this therapist who taught me about neuroplasticity, which I'm sure many of your listeners know about it, but it's basically the concept that your brain, can change, that you can change your brain, by training it in different ways. It's kind of amazing. They've worked with stroke victims on helping them learn how to speak through neuroplasticity. It's really a wonderful concept. But once I realized that I was able to change my own brain, sort of started to think about experiments to help myself get through these. And I came up with the idea of writing a blog. Actually, a friend of mine was like, you know, you're a really great writer, and I know you miss writing. At the time, blogs were really in. so my dear friend Elliot was like, why don't you start a blog? And I thought about what I could write that was relevant. And I came to the idea of writing about doing something that was weird or unusual or out of my comfort zone or scary. And I did it 5 days a week for 6 months straight.
Wow.
It was wild, especially because I didn't have a lot of money. I was very lucky that I live in New York because there are a lot of things to do and you can find crazy free things that are just weird. and I called it skydiving for pearls, which, you know, immediately got me into trouble because, of course, the second day afterwards, my good friend Sarah was like, so when are we going skydiving? I was like, oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, I can't say no to that now, can I? You know, what were you going to say?
Did you go skydiving ever?
I did, actually, yeah. It was about 6 months. It was toward the end of that, you know, everyday challenge. And I went skydiving with Sarah and a bunch of our friends. We all got a Groupon together, which, you know, you think the things you don't want to do on the cheap, skydiving is probably
right,
one of them.
Right, yeah.
but thankfully, it worked out well for us.
Related.
And, you know, I kind of learned at that moment, like, aside from just getting accustomed to change, one of the biggest lessons I learned from skydiving was that if you're going to say yes to everything, you really have to give yourself permission to say no. Because I was so scared that week leading up to skydiving, because I really never thought I'm not somebody.
Yeah, no, I would be too. I don't like heights.
I'm never going skydiving. And you know, when my friends, I was like, okay, I'm for this. But the week beforehand, I was up every night. I could not sleep and I was terrified. And so I made a deal with myself and I was like, listen, if you go, you know, I promise you, you can say no. Like, if you don't want to do it, it's okay. We can turn around. And these planes that you go in skydiving are the tiniest, scariest little planes ever. And the guy who was flying the plane said to me, yo, don't worry. You know, most of that, like, there's never been an accident with this company in terms of, like, dying from skydiving. The only major, like, injuries have been from the plane.
Oh, great. You mean like hitting your head on the way out or something, or what?
I don't know.
Arm on the wheel as you're falling out of the plane.
I'll tell you, it didn't make me want to stay in the plane, though.
It probably almost felt more, you know, just free just to like get out of that thing, right?
Yeah. Well, so it's great because there's a video of me skydiving online. Yeah. And it's so funny because my tandem jumper, and I couldn't have done it by myself, but my tandem instructor, he says to me, are you ready? And I'm like, no, okay, but let's do this. So he opens the door and the wind rushes in and I scream, oh my God, no. And then
did he say go? Yeah.
I definitely said no. It's very clear. And then I stop and I breathe. And after I had given myself permission to scream that, then I'm like, okay, where did you say I put my foot? And he's like, just over there on the little ledge. And I'm like, okay, inside or outside? He says, outside. I go to put my foot out and we're falling out. And wow. My only challenge to myself was to breathe normally. And I did. I just kept breathing in and out. And it was so much fun. I was actually disappointed when the parachute opened because I get a little motion sickness. And the free fall is wonderful. Mm. But man, it really, like, that day taught me so much. Just the ability to get up there and say, no, this is really scary, but I'm going to breathe through this and I'm going to keep going.
Mm. Well, I would imagine it's nice to have that in your back pocket going forward, knowing that, you know, you did do that and you stepped into it and you know what I mean? So in case something else possibly comes up and you know what I mean? I kind of feel that way with the triathlons and the Ironman under my belt, you know, way back when. It just was nice having those in my back pocket going forward and kind of realizing that, you know, I can kind of probably pretty much do anything I want if I put my mind to it.
Oh yeah, man. I ran the New York City Marathon. Another thing I never thought I'd do, but I told me to do it. So I did it. And man, you're right. It's such a valuable experience to be like, no, I can push through this. Mm, well, huge.
That's awesome. And you know, there's a lot to be said about just stepping out of our normal routine and to do it as much as you did. That's wild. But you know, when we do stuff that isn't really just in our normal day-to-day stuff, it makes us feel alive. And I, you know, I get into ruts a little bit myself and kind of, you know, going through the motions, and it's just a good reminder to mix it up and to go do something you haven't done before. You know, even if you don't like it, still it's different. And it just wakes your senses up in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think my number one rule at this point is if it makes you uncomfortable, lean in and find out why.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love it.
Wow. Thanks.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm glad we took that little diversion. We're going to dig back into the singing part a little bit. I'm fascinated by this. What is the audition process like? And that's got to be scary, especially when you were just starting out.
Oh, yeah. You know, you got me on that one. Auditions are still the thing I have to work on the most. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
in allowing yourself to do them or the actual, like, preparing for one?
Preparing for one, especially when the stakes feel high. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I first started singing here at the Met, I had auditioned for them 5 years in a row. Mm. And I remember when I was 19 and I was at Westminster Choir College, I thought I wanted to be a music teacher. Turns out, no, I really just like performing. But I, at the time, I knew about the Metropolitan Opera and I knew about their full-time course. They have a wonderful full-time course. Those people work so unimaginably hard. You can't imagine. It's like 6 or 7 days a week, depending on the week. Sometimes they're doing 7 shows a week. And wow. They rehearse almost every day, sometimes from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on top of all of those shows.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because they've got like 20 to 25 shows that they're doing in repertory every year. Some of them are new. Some of them are in Russian. Some of them are in Czech and Italian and German. And, you know, they are working so hard. But when I was 19, I said to my boyfriend at the time, I said, you know, I actually really love singing in ensembles. I love singing as a soloist, too. But I think I could be happy if I were in the Metropolitan Opera Chorus for the rest of my life.
Mm.
So I started auditioning for them, and I thought, these people are never going to hire me, so I'm just going to keep showing up until they tell me to go away. And there's something great about that, and I had so much fun at those auditions because there was a great pianist, and I could play with new repertoire and try different arias and see what worked for me, and it was fun. And so when I booked the Met my first year, it was a surprise to me, and it was probably a really great audition because I didn't care.
Well, you know, that's the same in acting, right? If you just can go in there and not really just let go of the stakes or whatever and just do it, right? And just be in the moment and stay out of your head.
You know, the other tricky thing about opera, so like acting, because I've done some
difference?
Acting, and acting is great because they encourage you to play and they want you to try and they want you to take risks.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in opera, not that they don't want you to be present and take some risks, but they really want it to be perfect.
Yeah.
And so there's a pressure with opera that comes through a lot that isn't quite there in the same way with acting. Not that acting has no pressure, but it's different. You really have to, like, God forbid you're a little flat or your vibrato isn't ringing the right way or you sing the wrong word or you breathe in the wrong place. It's like, oh did you see what he did? You know, and one little strike like that might keep you from getting a job if somebody else does something perfectly, you think. But it's also a lot about personality, and I think a lot of opera singers don't realize that, and they just get so nervous, and then their auditions aren't great, which I have struggled with, especially since being hired at the Met, because I love it there. And for a while, I was very, very close my first couple of years to getting the full-time job. I actually was told that, you know, I had a call back, and I was told that I was one of the choices for a full-time job that didn't open up because somebody decided not to retire after all. And then the following year, I was so nervous. My audition was terrible. And year after year, I would do these kind of terrible auditions. And I thought, oh my God, how am I still working here in the part-time chorus? And I'm very lucky that Maestro Palumbo knows my work and he sees me doing my work and he hears me regularly. And so he knows not to judge me on one bad day. And sometimes I'll have a great audition and sometimes it's not that great. But I'll tell you, being a coach has saved my audition.
How so?
Actually, two things have saved my auditions. It started with Josh Pice. I blame Josh Pice first.
Oh, the
I don't
actor.
Know if you, yes, and yeah. the teacher. I yeah. freaking love this guy. Josh, he's just brilliant. And he teaches this really wonderful method, part of which is all about accepting your emotions in the moment and allowing them to be what they are without judging them.
Mm.
And another part of it is just really being in the moment. And when you're allowing your emotions to be what they are and you're letting them change naturally as they do, when you're not trying to change them, then it makes being present and being a full human and performing, even in opera, so much easier and more organic. And in coaching, I've learned a similar concept where, you know, we really learn to identify the different voices in our heads and in our clients' heads. Mm-hmm. The two primary ones being the voice of the saboteur, that that voice that speaks to you that's not really part of you. It's kind of conditioned from all of those naysayers in your life or the times that you've felt shame that just kind of like come out and say, you can't do this. Who do you think you are? You know, if you're not perfect, it's not going to work for you. Yeah. Or just breathe. If, you know, my favorite was just breathe. As long as you get that first note on the breath, everything else will be fine. Then you sing that first note and it's not on the breath. And then the rest of the time in your aria, all you're thinking about is, oh my God, I screwed up that first note. You know?
So
I told my saboteur, the last year when I did my audition, I told my saboteur to stay at home and watch the holiday movies that I didn't have time to watch.
I love it.
And I brought with me my higher self, and I've done a lot of work in coaching to identify my higher self. My higher self is this awesome lion who just lays back on the grass with his limbs spread all the way out and has no problem holding a gaze. And his catchphrase is, "Did you see my mane?" I know that's a little ridiculous, but it helped me so much to personify that side of me that knows that I'm pretty great. Like, I'm a human being. I mean, all of us are pretty great. I taught myself how to walk and speak and also sing opera and also coach and do all of these really amazing things in my life. That's the person that I want to bring with me into my auditions. And my audition last year was great. And I'm very fortunate to be in three shows this year, I think in part because of that. And I'm just, you know, auditions are a beast that I continually have to train along with my mind, because otherwise I just can't show up and be who I really am.
Yeah. Well, it... But yeah, it's for me, you know, with acting and stuff, they're getting easier just because I'm kind of just, I don't know, maybe it's just maturity. Maybe it's just a part of me that's just learning to really just love and accept myself more. And I think that takes care of a lot of it too. Yeah. But, you know, but yeah, when you're judging yourself and you're your own worst critic and you go into something like that and you feel like you need to be perfect, you're done from the get-go. Mm.
You know, I think, I really do think, is that a quote, perfect is the enemy of the good?
I've never heard. Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe it you is know, now.
I really feel like that's so true. Imperfections are so beautiful, and it's what audiences resonate with the most, I think.
I agree. I think we all want to be our authentic, true selves, and when somebody is showing imperfection, it gives us permission to be that way too. In some ways, you know what I mean? It just takes the pressure off. And we just, it's just so, it's tiring carrying all that extra weight of trying to be somebody that, you know, we're who we aren't just because we think we need to be, or, you know what I mean? Or all that stuff that we do to fill those voids that waste time and energy too.
Well, yeah. And we're so busy trying to please people and trying to be what people, what we think people want us to be. And we just end up being factory people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to be a factory person.
No,
I'm done with that, man.
Nor do I.
Oh.
Nor do I. Gosh, what drives you? Where do you get your inspiration from with your singing?
Oh, with my singing. Great question. You know, I think part of what drives me is, just the concept of being able to learn something new. I love singing that there's always a new language to tackle, or a new, like this Doll's House that I'm learning with Ray Ludicky is a really interesting new tonal language for me. His concept of tonality is a little different than other composers that I've worked with, and I'm really enjoying getting that in my ear. It's kind of like a nice, sweet, nerdy thing to do. I also really, really love working with people. I'm such a social creature. And oh man, there's something beautiful. I think it's also what draws me, not just as a soloist, but also as an ensemble singer. Like, singing with choirs is amazing. You know, they've done studies where choirs actually, like, their heartbeats will synchronize.
Oh my gosh.
And their circulation will synchronize. It's kind of like this wild thing. And it's, I don't know, I went to a Halloween party that my amazing choral contractor, Nancy Wirch, throws every year. She and her husband, Chris, and it's so much fun. And I get to go and I see all these friends from all these different gigs that I do. And, you know, every summer I get to go to this, we call it opera camp. But every summer I get to go. This year, if I get to do it, it'll be my 13th year. I get to sing at Bard Summerscape, where we do an opera. We're up there for about 5 weeks with our, you know, 50 of our closest friends, and we're housed and we're fed and we're paid well. And we just get to, like, you know, Leon Botstein, he's the president at Bard College, and he loves to do works that nobody's ever heard of before. He loves to uncover these things that are just beautiful, wonderful gems. And we get to do these really cool operas and create great works that inspire audiences. I mean, I don't think it's possible for me to completely tell you all the things that drive me as a singer, because it's just like, man, there's not much in life that gets better than this. Like, I get to almost meditate. Mm-hmm. In the way that I sing with my friends and make great art and inspire audiences and learn new things. I mean, it kind of, you know, Brian, I had a podcast for a while. I'm on a bit of a hiatus right now. It's called The Peace of Persistence. And I interviewed this guy, Charles Seaford, who was at the time the head of the Center for Wellbeing at the New Economics Foundation in the UK. And they did a lot of studies on what makes people happy, what gives people well-being.
Yeah.
And gosh, let me think if I can remember this. It was...
I think I know what one of them is.
Okay, go on.
You tell me. No, you first.
Well, one of them is to be active. Mm-hmm. One of them is to connect. Mm. One of them is to keep learning.
Yeah.
One of them is to give back. Oh, am I missing one?
Well, you're doing all these things with your singing. I mean, yes. It helps to be creative. I mean, to create.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to find it. Take notice. Oh, which is all about being present. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a sixth one that some people have added, which is like to care for the planet, which is also another really important part of my life. But singing covers all of those things.
Well, I just think it's so, I know for myself how, you know, I found all these creative abilities that I had later on in life that I didn't know that were inside of me. And it's just, I just really, that's almost probably the happiest places that I am is when I'm creating. And so, you know, it's like you said, it's a meditation. We're connecting to source, spirit, God, whatever you want to call it. And so you're able to do that as well as learn, as well as connect, as well as to share, all at the same time. And so you're very, very fortunate.
That's kind of bonkers.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's true. Sometimes I do struggle with that paycheck, you know, coming here and there, but man, it's worth every moment.
Yeah.
I really cannot say that I feel like I have wasted my time.
Well, it's just, I'm the same way. You know what I mean? When we're entrepreneurs and kind of doing our thing and trying to do our thing and figuring out what our thing is all at the same time, you know, we just, it's kind of it's a different path. And, you know, not that it's right or wrong or what have you, but it's different. And there's pros and cons to everything, but I wouldn't trade it either, even though I too don't have the steady paycheck.
And you know, I'm so grateful too for finding life coaching. And, you know, I really want to coach and speak and write and help people, you know, kind of do what I have. I really want to help people embrace change and lean into the things that push their boundaries and make themselves a little uncomfortable to like expand their lives. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, I thought, I'm only going to sing for the rest of my life. I'm never going to sell out. And then this vision came to me and I was like, oh my God, I have this other passion and it's just as strong, if not stronger. So it's like, it's really fun to see how the two things kind of play off of each other and lead into each other and make my life fuller. I feel there are days where I'm just like, it's not fair. I was very lucky. I took myself on a trip that I've been wanting to go on since I was 19. I went to Fiji in August. Mm-hmm. And I met these people who live in a village with no cars and no roads and no horses. And, you know, they just get to each other by like climbing over mountains.
Wow.
And these people are so beautiful and so loving and so giving. And then I went to the mainland and I met somebody who hitchhikes every day each way to get to work to support his family as a driver because he can't afford his own car. Hmm. And that's like, you know, kind of common. I mean, they're a developing country. And and I stayed in touch with him over online, and he messaged me and he was like, where are you right now? And I was like, I'm on the subway. Hmm. And he said, what's that? And I said, well, it's like a train, but underground. And he was just like, wow.
Yeah.
And I, like, we do not realize how freaking good we have it. And I spend most of my days thinking like, how did I get to live this life? I feel so lucky.
Yeah. And you know what is interesting? And I know that you've kind of stepped outside of it, but I would even venture to say that those people are probably happier. Than the most people. I'm not saying you necessarily, because you're doing what you love, but I'm saying just in general, for just us, a lot of the people who are going through the motions here and, you know, are on social media all the time and just bear the brunt of all the negativity that's in the news, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I think sometimes less is more.
Yes. But you know, I still think I was doing what I loved, you know, 10 years ago and wanted to die every day. Mm-hmm. Like I'm still convinced that it's all about, and you found this because, you know, you left the security of your business with your family and moved to LA and took like big risks, you know, really rewriting your own life. And I think there's something so important about realizing that real comfort doesn't come from the things we think will make us comfortable.
Exactly. Yeah, that's something to think about there.
I think about it every day.
Well, you know, and yeah, I mean, I've had my own little moments where, you know, I just in my mind, I need to keep pushing my pile forward and keep producing and doing things and putting stuff out there. And I wasn't really enjoying the process and just the journey. And I, you know, a number one book doesn't bring one happiness, you know? And, a few years ago, I just kind of realized, you know, I don't want to continue doing it like this because I'm not happy. And it was my own expectations that kind of set me up for that. But since then, I've really tried to just incorporate some of the things that I was neglecting in my life. You know, whether it's relationship or intimacy or just things like that, that when we get too focused on something that we can you know, kind of just, it goes away.
I mean, that's the big lesson that you have too. That's like, you have to be able to say no sometimes to say yes.
Yes. So I really needed to just kind of do a mindset change on just doing things that brought me joy and just trust the process. And when I did release something, just trust that it would reach who it was supposed to reach. And that's, you know, it's out of my hands after that, instead of just, you know, is this the next thing? Is this the thing that's going to spring me? You know what I mean? Or get me to that quote destination. And that just, that was not making me happy.
Ooh, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
What brings you the most joy?
I love creating. You know, whether it's a spoken word piece or putting a little short film together. I think it's, you know, acting really does bring me some joy. I think it's been very cathartic. And in the past, I still find myself doing it. I try to choose projects or you know, submit for projects that are areas that I know I need to grow in or maybe release. Or does that make sense? You know what I mean? It's very cathartic. Sometimes, you know, go to some sad places, bring, you know, give myself permission to go there and let it out. And, you know, and it's funny, like the audition process is a little scary for me too. And I think, it's just, man, I don't know, it's that thing of feeling like we're being judged, but when the camera's on, I'm fearless. It's so interesting where some people it's the opposite, but for me, you know, when the camera's rolling, I'm no fear.
So the higher self for you to bring to the audition is the camera.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
That's wild.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I'm still evolving and I'm in transition myself right now. So, I mean, you know, as far as what brings me happiness, I think just creating, and I do enjoy connecting with people. I really do. And I know that I have a little bit of fear in the speaking department, but I'm doing more of it. And it really does bring me joy. And so I know I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, and things are unfolding perfectly. And, you know, it's we're all here to learn and grow. And I think one of the toughest things for us to do is to learn to love and accept ourselves. And, you know, I've had to work on that as well, just like everybody else, and probably more so in some ways. But it's interesting.
Yeah, man, interesting. Those saboteurs are mean.
Yes, they are. Oh, my gosh. I think we're getting close to the end, but I want to ask you a couple more questions. Okay. If there was one thing you wish the world could see differently through your eyes, what would it be?
Ooh, I feel like I've already talked so much about change.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It really is like my number one rule, though. You know, so I would say, okay, I would say that you need to be the architect of your own life.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's meant creating experiments and doing the research and finding the things that will make me a better human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I recently read Michael Pollan's book. I think it's called How to Change Your Mind.
Mm.
That's all about psychedelics.
Mm.
And their use. And, you know, I'm not somebody who, I'm not a big criminal, Brian.
I could have told you that.
I was really curious about this and about like the healing power of it, because I, you know, basically what Michael Pollan talks about and what I've read in other places is that psychedelics, they kind of have this unique property where they decrease circulation to this part of your brain called the default mode network.
Okay.
And that's the part of your brain that kind of like, it's basically your ego. It keeps all of the parts of your brain from talking to each other wildly.
Wow.
And making lots of connections.
That needs to be bottled and sold.
Right. Well, they say that children, like babies and toddlers, think this way, which is why children are so imaginative. But adults, you know, develop this strong default mode network. And you can also quiet it apparently through meditation. Apparently there are Buddhist monks that are very good at this. But when you take these psychedelics, they quiet the default mode network and allow your whole brain to communicate. And it sort of opens you up in this crazy, beautiful way that makes you feel like everything is connected. And I,
you know, we're talking shrooms or like DMT. I mean, I've always been curious to try DMT.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And,
So I think you were talking about saying yes to things. So, you know, I have a couple of friends who are very well versed in this world, and they've introduced me to a couple of things. And that includes, mushrooms and, sorry, Mom, LSD and also DMT. DMT is a hard one for me because I can't inhale it very well. I just cough it all up. But I'm curious about ayahuasca, which is the sort of edible form of DMT, but it lasts a lot longer and has more physical effects. But all of them do the same. There's also another one called 5-MeO-DMT, which is smoking toad. That everybody describes as the Everest of it's like the Iron Man for psychedelics. It only lasts 20 minutes, but apparently it's a crazy 20 minutes. So I don't know about that one, but all of them do that, you know. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to work with mushrooms, especially. I don't do it often. I find it sort of a sacred practice, but it sort of resets me in this beautiful way for about 6 months. And the
studies helps remind you kind of maybe what things are really about, or what, you know what I mean. There's more to life than just what we're doing.
I mean, the most recent one I had was so productive. It just made me realize that my parents worked so hard to make me who I am. Mm-hmm. And it brought me this gratitude that I'd never really experienced before. And I was able to message them and thank them for everything that they'd given to me. And they read it aloud together and like messaged me back and were so grateful. And, you know, I've had realizations like, there's no reason for anything to have ever existed. But here I am. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it always just brings me back to a place of gratitude and connection. But I know it's kind of a funny thing, and I'm not trying to tell all your listeners that they need to go out and try psychedelics. But it's one of those things where, like, if I could help everybody see what I see in those moments, I really would, because the studies that they're doing are profound, and they're helping terminal cancer patients come to terms with death. They're helping people with PTSD and anxiety and depression heal for like 6 to 18 months at a time. I mean, it's a crazy thing. And so, like, you can get this apparently with serious meditation too. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, I think what I would really say is, again, like, be the architect of your own life, whatever that means for you.
Yeah.
Find ways to give yourself the life that you deserve, to make your brain as happy as it can be, to make your connections as full as they can be, and to make your life as honest and authentic as you can.
Yeah. Well said.
Thanks.
Wow. All right. So I would, the podcast is called Habits for Success. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you what some of your favorite daily habits were, you know, that kind of kept you grounded and your foundation solid.
Ooh, daily. Well, daily. I don't do a lot of things daily, but there are a couple, actually. This is going to blow a lot of people's minds, probably even more than the psychedelic. I sleep 8 to 9 hours a night, like almost every day.
So do I. Good for you.
Yeah, man. I don't think many people do that. And even like one of my favorite habits gurus, he's all about like, get rid of that extra hour of sleep so you can do these daily habits. And I'm like, no, man. I need my sleep because...
Well, yeah, you're working really hard. Plus, I mean, you know, I don't know if you're, you know, where you fall in the extrovert introvert category thing. I'm an introvert and I need a lot of time to refill my cup.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much an extrovert, but I do need it. I get pushed to a point where I'm like, nope, I need to be alone and I need to sleep. And sleep, you know, keeps me singing. It keeps me happy. It keeps me healthy. I love my sleep. And oddly, the other big thing I do every single day is podcasts. I listen to a couple of brief news podcasts every morning just to stay in touch with things. And then I listen to usually some kind, well, they're all nerdy learning podcasts that have nothing to do with what I do in my normal life.
But that's good though. You need to separate yourself, you know, and just kind of, it's like reading a fluffy book at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they run the gamut from Dan Savage's Savage Love Cast, which is like a sex and relationship podcast,
okay,
to your podcast, to I love, my friends have this pod, well, of course, but I love this podcast called Nori Reversing Climate Change. My friends are creating the world's first carbon removal marketplace, and I freaking love them for being brilliant and for trying to save humanity on the planet. Mm-hmm. And they're interviewing weekly really great climate scientists who are working to solve the problem of climate change. And it makes me feel like maybe it'll be okay.
Right? We need some hope.
And also it gives me talking points to talk to other people about, because it's one of those things we really all need to get behind. But you know, I love listening. Like, I listen to The Weeds, which is a political podcast. I listen to a lot of different science versus things that, again, just really sort of make my life fuller.
Well, I mean, you're a serial learner, and I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah, I, as I said to my father, I blame him, because he's always been really nerdy and introduced me to technology at a young age that most people my age didn't have. And I'm really lucky for that zest for learning, and it's all his fault.
Dang, it's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, what's next?
Oh, well, you know, like I said, November 20th.
Other than the shows, obviously, yeah.
That's my first certification call. I'm going to be going through a certification process with Coactive Training Institute and the International Federation for Coaching for the next 6 months or so. And just working really hard on building my coaching business. I'm planning to write a book about leaning into change for positive growth.
Love it.
And I am eventually going to do some focusing on speaking as well. And all that falls under the umbrella of my brand new LLC, which is called Time for Change Enterprises LLC. I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, I love that. No, that's all. Wow. I love all that you got going on. Excuse me. I'm getting hoarse. Yeah, no, that's wow. Very impressive. And I loved it. I love the title.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm very excited about it, although there's already a Time for Change coaching in the UK, so don't get us confused.
I won't. So, all right, how can listeners find you?
You can find me, let's see, I would say Instagram. I'm pretty active on there, at the Abigail Wright. That's T-H-E, not T-H-E-E, although, you know. I'm also on Twitter, although I don't really use it very much, at Abigail Liz Wright. Thanks, Mom and Dad, again for that awesome name. My middle name's Elizabeth, and you know, how could I resist? And
website.
So my primary website, which is under construction, is abigailwright.com, and also building timeforchange.coach. Gotta love the dot coach extension. I'm excited.
Yeah, I've never heard that before. Cool.
Yeah. Well, have you not heard? You can do all kinds of things now. You could do brianbenson.ninja.
Dot stud.
Ninja. There you go.
I'm just kidding.
Dot stud. Yeah. So I'll be at timeforchange.coach. Huh. And any of your listeners who want can please come to the website and sign up for a free chemistry session if they want to have a coaching with me. It's a 2-hour complimentary coaching session. So.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They don't even have to mention you, but they're more than welcome to.
Yeah, for 50% off.
50% off of free is free.
Yes.
And I'm super happy to welcome any of your listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really enjoyed our chat. Thank you.
You too, Brian. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Habits for Success, the podcast. I invite you to learn more about the work that I'm doing at gbrianbenson.com. And I hope that you will check out my new book, The Award-Winning Habits for Success, Inspired Ideas to Help You Soar, on Amazon via the link habitsforsuccessbook.com. Just remember, the only thing that is standing between you and your goals and dreams is a belief in yourself, a solid foundation, and habits for success. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes. and we always love making new friends. So please feel free to share this podcast with like-minded individuals. Big thank you to my producer, Casey Jerome Beck. Until next time, be safe, be well, and always be yourself.